From Williamsport to Dubois, Bloomsburg to Latrobe, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the 2021-2022 session of the state legislature is underway, and there is a full agenda of issues awaiting the attention of lawmakers. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And it's time for We the People of Pennsylvania to reclaim control of state government. I'll have a town hall commentary on how three proposed constitutional amendments give us the ability to do so. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The new session of the Pennsylvania General Assembly got underway this past week. Republicans remain firmly in control of both chambers. It was smooth sailing in the House, where Brian Cutler of Lancaster County was reelected Speaker. But in the Senate, a disputed election for a seat in Allegheny County resulted in an uproar. Republicans refused to cede former Democratic Senator Jim Brewster, who had been certified the winner by a slim margin, but challenger Nicole Ziccarelli is challenging in court the counting of undated mail-in ballots. As a result, the Republican majority refused to swear in Brewster, leading to an angry shouting match and the ejection of Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman from the presiding officer's chair. Three state employees have sued the Service Employees International Union, or SEIU, alleging the union violated their constitutional rights by forcing them to fund a union they had left. The Fairness Center filed suit on behalf of the employees who resigned their membership in the union in 2020, but continue to have dues deducted from their paycheck. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling several years ago upheld the constitutional right of a worker to be a public employee without being forced to join or pay dues to a labor union. The number of abortions performed in Pennsylvania increased by about 2% in 2019, according to the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Statistics from the Pennsylvania Department of Health show 654 more abortions were performed in the state in 2019 compared to 2018. An average of 85 babies a day died by abortion every day in 2019. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. It's a new year, but many old problems remain to be solved. That means a full agenda for legislators in Harrisburg. Here to take a look at issues and expectations for the coming months is our Capitol Watch crew, David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Good to be here again in the new year. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. And as always, the parade of events happening in Pennsylvania state government, it's on the march. And at the end of the year just closed out, we said farewell to a great Pennsylvanian, Governor Dick Thornburgh, Pennsylvania's a two-term governor, elected in 78, left in 86, and then following that was the Attorney General of the United States under Presidents Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. And what a great man, what a good man, and a very consequential life, gone at age 88. But what was really shocking, Rebecca, was the really tragic news that that State Representative Mike Reese from Westmoreland and Somerset counties that he was cut down with a brain aneurysm at age 42.
42, yeah. And the sad, really sad thing, he was just elected House Majority Caucus Chairman. He had a very bright future in this upcoming legislative session. And it's just a shame. I mean, I think Harrisburg was kind of rocked by the news last week of his tragic passing.
So anyway, it's just another reminder of that this mortal life is temporary, and to, you know, take each day in full and just, you know, make the most of it. So on that sober note, we start the new legislative session, which actually rang out with fireworks in the Senate of Pennsylvania, that just as State Senator Jake Corman from Centre County was taking over as the president pro tempore, that they had to blow the whistle on the lieutenant governor who was not abiding by the rules.
It had happened with the swearing in, actually, of the new senators. There is a contested Senate election still being challenged in court, and it was Senator Brewster's election.
Yeah, the 45th out in Allegheny in Westmoreland County.
Westmoreland, right, yes. The candidate Nicole Zicarelli, has challenged him in that race, and it's now in federal court, having to do with how ballots were counted differently. Certain category ballots were counted differently in Westmoreland than they were in Allegheny, or not counted in Westmoreland.
Correct.
But were counted in Allegheny. So that is still pending in court. The Republican majority in the Senate did not believe it was appropriate to seat Senator Brewster until that lawsuit is resolved. So that led to back and forth of motions to the Democrats trying to get him seated, the Republicans trying to swear in the remainder of the 24 senators, which led to a disagreement between the Lieutenant Governor Fetterman and Majority Leader Corman.
And it was, I thought, a really striking move on the part of Senator Corman, that he's going to brook no foolishness.
He did. He stepped in and he took over the rostrum and swore in the 24 members of the Senate who were elected, was backed up by a vote from the majority on that move. The lieutenant governor left the chamber, and I don't believe he came back.
You know, even though it may be a rocky ride, there are a lot of really important things that we need to accomplish this year.
Yes.
And certainly starting with the Commonwealth's fiscal position and the upcoming state budget, that in the sort of the second stage of the 2019-2020 state budget, that the General Assembly used about $3 billion of non-recurring revenue, meaning that that's money that they had on hand, but that will not be coming back. And so that means with the COVID response and the way that the economy is only partially back, it means that the next budget is likely to be a very difficult one.
Yeah. Just a news story just came out yesterday that Senator Brown, who's the chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate, announced that they are expecting about a $3.5 billion deficit going into next year's budget. So your point about the $3 billion one-time spending is well put, because that's about what they're going to be dealing with next year and a budget deficit. They're going to have to be very lean and think about how to more efficiently deliver government services next year. So that will make for some very interesting discussions.
Right. And I'll be looking to the governor's budget address the beginning of February,
right,
because last year, Governor Wolf was completely unfazed by reality and put forward a budget with, you know, all kinds of, you know, new spending and expansions and whatnot. And I will be interested to see if the governor will be at all chastened by the changed conditions resulting from the pandemic and his own lockdown orders.
Right. In fact, I think if I looked at this calendar right, that the budget address, the governor's budget address, may be on Groundhog Day this year. So we'll have to wait and see if some of those old those old policies come back up again, like minimum wage increase, a severance tax, a lot of the things the governor has brought up, you know, in every budget address. If that's still, you know, within his he thinks that can get done. I'm not sure.
Well, it's going to be it'll be very interesting. But I mean, of course, ultimately, the thing that matters is the, you know, what is the quality of life for everyday Pennsylvanians? Do people have the chance to, you know, to keep their jobs, to find work, to succeed with their own enterprises and small businesses? And, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into, you know, all the things that we call competitiveness. How well do we stack up as a Commonwealth versus our competitor states? And, you know, there are things that other states have done in response to the pandemic that Pennsylvania has not done. And at the top of that list is putting in place safeguards for frivolous lawsuits, that for those businesses or entities, whether they're, you know, not-for-profit organizations or schools, you know, for those entities that are abiding by the CDC and Department of Health guidelines, doing all the right things to try to prevent, you know, infection from spreading, there should be safe harbor for them to say, look, if they've done all the things that we've asked of them, then there should be a presumption that if somebody got sick, they didn't get sick there. Mm-hmm. And other states, most other states have done this. Governor Wolf could have done it himself, yes, by his executive order, which he didn't. And then at the close of last year's legislative session, that the General Assembly sent him a bill that would have established those kinds of protections, and the governor vetoed it.
Yes, limited and temporary liability protection for businesses and nonprofits. He vetoed it. Yes, that was one of many vetoes last session, but that was one that was really disheartening because it's like you said, other states have had the foresight to do this. It sets us up for economic recovery because it actually encourages businesses to put money into their businesses to improve, to expand, because they're not going to be fearful of a lawsuit that comes along and takes away everything they have. So it's really critical for our economic recovery to get that done. So where that stands, I know the Republicans, the majority in the legislature, is still interested in getting that done. So what it will take for the governor to sign a limited temporary liability protection bill, I'm not sure. But hopefully we will get to that point.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania. And again, just looking at what's coming along in the legislative session, and you know, the next 2 years of Pennsylvania state government, you know, certainly there will be you know, really consequential elections, you know, high profile elections 2 years from now, November of 2022, when we elect a new governor and a new United States senator to succeed our friend Pat Toomey. But there are big elections that are happening this year too.
Yes, judicial elections are happening this year. And I think with everything we've been through and the Supreme Court upholding the governor's lockdowns over the past couple of months, and, you know, also on my list for this year is redistricting. That's going to be a big issue.
Yes.
And we recall that the Supreme Court overturned the congressional districts. Almost 3 years ago. So we know there's a lot of concern about fairness in the judiciary. And so it's really important to pay close attention to these judicial elections. And I believe that there's two Commonwealth Court races up for election this year. And at least one Supreme Court, I believe.
Yeah, I think Justice Saylor is retiring due to age.
Yes, that's right.
And I believe there's also one seat on the Superior Court. I believe that's the full slate of seats that are available. But because of the way that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has acted, like ruling against the black and white letter of the law, that the General Assembly is looking at a court reform, a plan that would amend the Constitution to establish judicial districts for all of the statewide courts. So rather than having everybody run statewide, that a particular jurist would run for a specific geographic judicial district. And again, that would change the composition of the court. And, mm-hmm, you know, we'll see how, where that goes.
The idea is it might make it a little more diverse in its viewpoint. Most of the judges on the appellate courts right now are from the big cities in Pennsylvania. And there's some thinking that, you know, that does color one's disposition. And and does make the courts, you know, favorable to a certain point of view.
Yes.
So that's kind of the idea with that. There are a couple of other constitutional amendments that are being considered that may be on the ballot this year. And that is one of them, judicial districts bill. But also there's a one to limit the governor's emergency powers.
Yes.
I think that's high on the agenda for the legislature.
Yes.
So that amendment, and because we're talking about constitutional amendments now, just so everyone understands, they have to pass in two consecutive legislative sessions.
And then afterwards, they're presented to the voters for
on
approval.
The ballot.
So the governor is not involved. And that when it comes to curbing the Pennsylvania governor's very expansive emergency powers, that bill passed in the previous session. So it's ready to be teed up again in this year.
Right. And what happened there, and so everyone recalls what happened last summer, the General Assembly actually passed a resolution ending the governor's emergency declaration.
Right, right, right. And current law. So current law says that upon passage of a concurrent resolution by both chambers of the General Assembly, the governor shall, which is the legal term meaning that you have to do it, that the governor shall end the emergency declaration.
Right.
Well, Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, no, 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 you have to send it to the governor for his signature.
Right.
And of course, he vetoed it, which means that you can only end an emergency declaration with a supermajority vote in both chambers, which means essentially, and this is what's happened, that the governor can rule with these emergency powers in perpetuity.
Right.
And it's very scary.
It is. It is. Well, that constitutional amendment, which passed last session, is probably going to be teed up to be considered very early again in this legislative session, hopefully. And it would fix that problem. So a resolution would end the disaster declaration, but it also would limit the governor's emergency powers to 21 days unless he came to the General Assembly and asked for it to be renewed. It gives him an immense amount of power, and it just is unconscionable how it's played out. So that is high on the agenda, I think, for the spring here. And if that passes early in the session, it will be on the ballot in May.
And expect a major campaign on both sides of the issue that, you know, Pennsylvania, you know, you have other states like California that are initiative and referendum states where you have these ballot issues, you know, flying hot and heavy like almost every election, and they spend enormous amounts of money on advertising and whatnot. I would expect that that on this ballot question that there would be a pretty serious PR campaign on both sides. From the business community, that there are places where we're hoping to, you know, to make progress. Spending restraint, as we said, has got to be at the top of that list. You know, but we're also looking at the opportunity from Pennsylvania Energy. And, you know, we continue to need a pro-growth, pro-production environment to help this home team advantage for Pennsylvania to manifest itself so that we can, you know, again, that we have a you know, an economic engine that's powerful enough to pull us out of the ditch, smacking down, as you said, another additional tax on energy production will probably be the first step in that process. That if we can't get good things done, at least to stop the bad things, and then, you know, move down that agenda of how do we deploy this asset to, you know, to help spur growth.
Well, along those lines, another thing that's moving along right now is the governor's regional greenhouse gas initiative, the REGI.
His carbon tax,
yes, which would force electric generators in Pennsylvania, natural gas and coal generators to purchase credits for putting out carbon dioxide. So that is moving along in the process. The regulation that the governor has that would put that into effect is out for public comment right now. So it's been getting thousands of public comments. It's very controversial.
It is.
But that regulation, it's going to increase the cost of Pennsylvania's electricity. It's going to hurt jobs in many areas.
It's going to amputate what remains of our coal-fired electricity generation.
Yes.
As listeners to the program heard before, the Sean Steffi from the Boilermakers,
right,
Local 154 out in Pittsburgh, that that this is just a terrible idea, and that these plants and the thing I want to emphasize is all of these plants that generate the electricity that we all use – Each one of these facilities is currently in compliance with the strictest DEP and EPA standards. Like, these are the plants that are still operating because the owners spent hundreds of millions of dollars, in some cases $1 billion per facility, to upgrade them when the Obama administration turned the screws on standards. So again, this is a moving of the goalposts that is going to wipe out an enormous amount of value with these facilities, and it's going to kill off thousands of jobs.
Yeah, not only that, but this is another executive action. This is something governor is doing without the involvement of the legislature. Indeed, it was another one of those V words. It was another veto last year. The General Assembly passed a bill that would, by Representative Struzzi, which would have required the governor to go through the legislature to put RGGI into effect, and he vetoed that one as well. So it's another executive action, and I'm certain that those executive actions are not going to slow down anytime
and
soon.
And it's like our whole system of representative self-government is supposed to be that the government can only do those things that it is specifically authorized to do by the Constitution and then through the will of the people, through their elected representatives. What we have now is this bizarre situation where the government is going to do whatever it can't be prevented from doing. You know what I mean?
Right. It just gets pushed farther and farther. It's like, how far can we get before we can't do any more? And that's exactly what it feels like right now.
Well, this is the battle that we're engaged in. And again, we thank you, the listeners, for taking time to be with us, to become informed on what's happening. And I'm always glad that I have my teammate Rebecca here to explain these things. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and the work that you're doing?
And I'm happy to be here. They can find us at nfib.com/PA, or we're on Facebook and Twitter too.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and me, thanks for listening. Happy New Year, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute a new government. Those words, proclaimed by the 13 original colonies on July 4, 1776 in Philadelphia, began the great experiment in self-government that became the United States of America. In 2020, the government of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania laid waste to the unalienable rights enumerated in the Declaration of Independence. Being destructive of these ends, it is now time for we the people to exercise our right to alter that government. The transgressions of Governor Tom Wolf and his administration are too numerous to restate here, but suffice it to say, he assumed extra constitutional powers, supposedly to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. His administration has refused to provide information justifying many of their draconian orders, and instead has relied on an activist state Supreme Court to run roughshod over a legislature which tried valiantly to restore balance. As a result, the time has come for Pennsylvanians to take back control of our state government, in fact, control of our lives, from a system of checks and balances that failed us during the COVID-19 pandemic. The good news is, if the legislature acts promptly and appropriately, we can do so in a matter of months. The vehicle for restoring both our rights and our state system of checks and balances are three proposed constitutional amendments designed to rein in a governor with dictatorial tendencies and a rogue state Supreme Court. Amending the Pennsylvania Constitution is a two-step process. First, the proposed amendment must be approved by both houses of the General Assembly in two consecutive legislative sessions. Then, the amendment must be approved by voters in a statewide referendum. The legislature approved the proposed constitutional amendments in the session that ended in November. The new session of the General Assembly has now commenced. With Republicans in firm control of both the House and Senate, approval of the amendments is likely to come within weeks. That would set up a May referendum for voters to give the amendments final approval. Two of the amendments center on the exercise of emergency powers by the governor. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Governor Wolf has abused that authority by claiming the power to sign or veto any legislation aimed at ending his emergency powers. Despite clear language in the law, the activist state Supreme Court sided with the governor, rendering the legislature powerless to end the emergency declaration. One amendment would require legislative approval within 21 days of any invocation of emergency powers by the governor. The other eliminates the requirement for a termination resolution to be presented to the governor. Taken together, the amendments would solidify the legislative intent of the current emergency powers law by placing a legislative check on the governor's authority. Another proposed amendment would end the statewide election of appellate court judges and justices and instead have members of the Commonwealth, Superior, and State Supreme Courts elected by region. This will accomplish two goals. First, it will dilute the power of special interests who expend large sums of money to influence statewide elections by concentrating on voters in heavily populated regions of the state. Second, and more importantly, the regional election of appellate court judges would result in the election of jurists more closely reflective of the diverse regions that constitute the state. We currently elect members of the legislature, state house and senate members, by district to ensure equal representation in that branch of government. To elect judges and justices in the same way would be both consistent and fair. As the May referendum on these proposed amendments approaches, look for entrenched special interests spearheaded by a governor who is loath to relinquish power, unleash attacks on the measures. The current system of checks and balances has failed because of their actions. The time has come for the people of Pennsylvania to dismiss their protests and to institute a new government protective of our rights. With a Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WMBS AM and FM in Uniontown, along with WEMR-FM and WBHV-FM in State College, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.